The Dream Hotel. By chance, a little hut came up for rent right opposite her brother's hotel, but it was very small and shabby, with only two rooms. Mary gave the matter some thought. She thought about making it a restaurant and a place to socialise, rather than somewhere to just stay the night. If she did that, there would be enough room for 50 dinner guests. She took it, and within a few days had decorated its dreary walls with colourful fabrics and bows, making the place look lively and inviting. She named it the British Hotel and employed a small team of staff to help her run the place. She hired a man named Mac to undertake general duties around the building and a cook from Cruises to help with preparing meals. Did you know? Mary also employed an on-site barber to tidy up the men's beards. This helped to attract American visitors. As a female business owner and single woman, it was sometimes difficult for Mary to manage the crowds who visited. Gambling was quite popular in Cruises, but it often caused people to disagree with each other and become violent, so Mary banned it from her hotel. She also had to be very careful so that she wasn't robbed or cheated. People did try. One evening, a gentleman settled down to dinner and helped himself to a lot of hard-boiled eggs. Eggs were expensive, as chickens were hard to come by in Cruises. Mary and her team would calculate how much money to charge by counting the eggshells on each person's plate. Mary had been watching the man eat lots and lots of eggs. Looking at his plate, however, there were hardly any eggshells on there. Getting suspicious, Mary sent Matt to take a closer look at what the man was up to. They realised he had been throwing the eggshells on the floor under the table so that he didn't have to pay. Mary asked Mac to collect and count the eggshells he'd dropped under the table so that she could present him with the evidence of what he'd been doing. He wasn't happy to have been caught, but Mary was pleased he hadn't managed to cheat her. Cruises could be quite a dangerous place, and violent fights would break out. Being a doctress, Mary was often approached to fix people's wounds. After a while, she became very familiar with treating stab and gunshot injuries. Little did she know this would all help her in the future, treating wounded soldiers on the frontline battle in the Crimean War. A rude goodbye. As time went on, Mary began to want a change from her life in Cruises. A friend from Jamaica had suggested Gorgona Island, where she could find her a building for £100. It sounded like the perfect opportunity and a great adventure, and in 1852, she prepared to leave. In Cruises, Mary had been very popular within the community, so she was invited to many goodbye parties among the local store and hotel keepers. One of these parties was at her brother's hotel on the anniversary of the Declaration of American Independence. Many Americans were present at the party, and celebrations were in full swing, with everyone enjoying a hearty meal. As the evening drew to a close, toasts were made to honour those at the party. A man stood up and cleared his throat, commanding the attention of the guests. The man thanked Mary for treating them when they had been sick with cholera. She was suddenly under the spotlight. However, the speech then took a turn that troubled Mary greatly. The man said it was a shame her skin wasn't white, as it would make her more acceptable. When he finished his speech, the guests all applauded. Mary was furious, but tried to stay as calm as possible. It was her brother's hotel, and she didn't want to give him any trouble. How dare the man undermine everything she had done purely because of the colour of her skin? Why were people so prejudiced against people with dark skin? Mary composed herself, ready to respond. She would be civil, but she would still speak her mind. She was genuinely pleased to have been of help to sick people in Cruises, but she couldn't allow this kind of prejudice in her presence. Mary said that her skin colour made no difference to all the work she had done to look after people. She also made it clear that she was proud of her skin colour, just as she was proud of her ability to help nurse people back to health. Mary said that even if her skin had been darker still, I should have been just as happy and just as useful and as much respected by those whose respect I value. The guests listened to her speech, though they were a little shocked to see a woman, and a dark-skinned woman at that, defending herself to a large group of people. The time came to leave for Gorgona, and once again, Mary found herself building an establishment from scratch. It was not easy, but Mary had the determination and imagination to make it happen. With some paid help, soon she once again had a brightly decorated dining room for guests, and this time she had a storeroom and a small private apartment for ladies. This new hotel was going to be mainly a social place for women, as well as for anyone who needed medical help. Mary had grown tired of cruises, and she eventually started to feel the same way about Gorgona. Leaving her hotel in the care of her brother, Mary decided it was time to return to Kingston. Parting and prejudice. Mary was eager to return home to Jamaica. After saying goodbye to people, she bought a ticket for an American ship leaving from Navy Bay and heading to Kingston. An American friend had suggested that she should wait for a British ship, but she was desperate to get back to Kingston and ignored the advice. When it was time to board the ship, two white American ladies stood in Mary's way. They were not happy to share space with a brown-skinned woman. Mary explained that she had paid and had every right to be on the ship. She continued with her maid and found a seat, trying to ignore the women. By now, a large crowd had gathered, none of whom wanted Mary on the ship because she was not white. Some of them became very rude and called Mary and her maid horrible names. Mary tried to get help from the stewardess of the ship. She asked if she could sit somewhere else, where she would not be in view of the angry passengers. The stewardess did not help, and so Mary left the boat. When she told some American friends what had happened to her, they were horrified, but not surprised. The transatlantic slave trade in America had still not been abolished at this point, and there was still lots of racism and violence towards people with dark skin. 2 days after this event, Mary left on a British ship called the Eagle, and she finally made it back to Kingston. She arrived just in time. An outbreak of yellow fever was spreading, so she got straight to work helping the sick. She treated officers, their wives and children at her house, and her patients became very fond of her. One patient, who was a young British surgeon, unfortunately got very sick, and Mary took care of him until his final moments, holding him in her arms. The mother of the young man was so grateful to Mary for looking after her son that she sent her a little gift all the way from England, a lock of his hair for her to remember him by. In 1853, Mary had been in Jamaica for 8 months when she had to return to the Isthmus of Panama to oversee the plans for her hotel. She ended up staying for another 3 months and opened a store in Navy Bay. While she was there, Mary heard about gold mines in Escribanus, a town about 70 miles away from Navy Bay. At the time, companies and members of the public were travelling there to see whether they might have any luck in finding some gold. Mary decided to try too, and set off in search of this valuable treasure. There was one occasion where she thought she had struck gold. She put what she'd found into bottles and took them to be looked at by a gold buyer. The buyer took one look and laughed. Unfortunately, the material, which was gold in colour and looked just like it, was completely valueless. Mary travelled between Escribanus and Navy Bay for some time before making an important decision that would change the course of her life. She decided once again to travel to England. The Crimean War calls. The Crimean War had broken out in October 1853 while Mary had been in Jamaica dealing with the outbreak of yellow fever. In 1854, Mary discovered that many of the soldiers who had visited her hotels in the past had joined the war. She desperately wanted to help them. That autumn, she arrived in London, ready to offer her skills as a nurse. The Crimean War started between Russia and Turkey. Russia wanted to take over Danube, which we know as Romania today. Danube was controlled by Turkey, so the two countries went to war to fight over who would get it. Britain and France entered the Crimean War in 1854 to fight against Russia. Britain, France, Turkey and Sardinia joined together and became allies. The Crimean War ended in 1856 when Russia gave in and moved towards peace talks. Mary had seen in the newspapers that the hospitals in Scutari, Turkey, where the British nurses were based, were overflowing with patients. They needed more nurses, and Mary felt she had the experience needed to make a real difference. She had treated all sorts of diseases and ailments. Thanks to her experience in cruises, she also knew how to treat bullet and knife wounds. To get to the Crimea as a nurse, Mary had to apply through the War Office. She arrived prepared with letters from senior officials whom she'd treated in Panama. Mary waited patiently to be seen by the secretary who could put her forward for the job, but the secretary refused to talk to her. Mary then tried the Quartermaster General's department, who told her to try the medical department. The medical department had already sent nurses over, so Mary was excited. She was in with a real chance of getting the job. Mary knew that Florence Nightingale was already in the Crimea and her hospital was in need of more nurses. What a perfect opportunity. Mary knew she had the right skills. She hoped that she would finally get to help the troops in the Crimea. Mary waited outside for her turn to be interviewed. She waited and waited. Finally, Mary was told that all the nursing positions had been filled and that she would not be chosen to fill a vacancy, even if there was one. Mary was devastated and confused. She had more than enough experience, and she had letters from respected officials to prove it. Why was this happening to her? Could it be that the British officials were judging her by the colour of her skin, just like some of the Americans she had met? She knew she could help the sick. She had been passionate about medicine all her life. Why couldn't other people see that? Mary said, was it possible that American prejudices against colour had some root here? Did these ladies shrink from accepting my aid because my blood flowed beneath a somewhat duskier skin than theirs? The next morning, Mary woke up more determined than ever. She decided if she really wanted to help, her only option was to travel by herself and pay her own way to the Crimea. Once there, she would open a hotel for the sick. Nothing was going to stand in her way. She left England on a boat called the Hollander in January, travelling with her friend and fellow business person Thomas Day. They made a plan to open a store and a hotel together. Mary used most of her money to buy the medicine she would need to treat the soldiers. She used the rest for food and clothes from England to give to soldiers who were homesick and looking for a piece of home. The Lady with the Lamp. The journey from England to the Crimea was long, and the ship made stops along the way in Gibraltar, Malta and Turkey. Mary would often bump into officers that she knew from Kingston. When the boat stopped in Malta, Mary saw some old friends who were medical officers. They had just come back from Scutari, where Florence Nightingale's hospital was based. When the officers heard Mary's plans, one of them wrote a letter for her to give to Florence Nightingale. Mary was told to go to the hospital and give her the letter, which would explain that the officers knew Mary and could recommend her skills. The boat continued to Turkey, and when Mary arrived in Scutari with the letter, she headed for the hospital. The hospital was quiet, but very full. Mary happened to come across some familiar faces. One soldier who had been hurt in the trenches sat up in his bed when he saw Mary and called out to her, "Mother Seacole!" She sat with him on his bed and tried to cheer him up. Mary continued walking around, and although she didn't work there, she couldn't help lending a hand. She changed bandages and made the soldiers more comfortable. Mary stayed at the hospital in Scutari all day, and before she knew it, it was dark. She would need a place to stay for the night. She remembered the letter of recommendation she had and asked one of the nurses to give it to Florence Nightingale. The nurse had made it clear that there were no jobs available, but Mary thought perhaps Florence Nightingale might allow her to stay, and then she could continue her onward journey the next morning. Before long, Florence Nightingale appeared, having read the letter. She soon made arrangements for Mary to stay overnight, and the next morning she had breakfast sent to Mary's room. The next day, Mary left the hospital in Scutari and headed by the sea to Balaclava, arriving at a busy port. Her first job was to announce her arrival to soldiers in the Crimea, so she had sent letters to one of the army camps and anyone else she knew that she could think of. Soon she would begin the busy work of building her hotel for the soldiers. After a long search, Mary and Thomas Day found an area for their hotel 2 miles from Balaclava, close to where the soldiers were stationed. It was hard work. As summer approached, the building started taking shape. They named it the British Hotel. Very soon it became well known for being a good place for soldiers to visit for medical treatment. At the British Hotel, as well as getting treatment for diseases that Mary was familiar with, the soldiers knew they could also buy supplies from the shop and enjoy home-cooked comfort food such as soup, cakes and jelly. Did you know? Some soldiers were too ill to make the journey to the hotel. Instead, they wrote letters to Mary requesting medicines and sent messengers to collect the items for them. It cost Mary a lot of money to buy the ingredients for her medicines, so she charged the patients who were able to afford it. But she never turned anybody away. Sometimes the poor patients would arrange to pay her back later. Sometimes they bought her small gifts, like apples and other fruits. A typical day for Mary began with her waking up at around 4 o'clock in the morning. She plucked and prepared chickens for meals later in the day and mixed up medicines ready for treatments. By 7 o'clock, her first guests would arrive for their morning coffee, and at 9:30, 6 soldiers would arrive for help. Mary treated people until midday, when she would leave to visit the nearest hospital and find out who had been injured in battle the previous night. Often she would see soldiers at her hotel for dinner one night and then seriously wounded in hospital the next day. She made sure to visit them because she wanted to offer some comfort, not just for them, but for their families at home. She said, "I used to think of their relatives at home who would have given so much to possess my privilege." After this, Mary would return to the British Hotel where the evening guests would gather for dinner. The hotel closed at 8 o'clock in the evening. After that, Mary would eat her own dinner, then get some rest before the next busy day. As the war went on, Mary became used to the sounds of gunfire coming from the trenches at night and the worry that came as she thought of the poor soldiers in battle. Mary described it as feeling like having a large family of children ill with fever and dreading to hear which one had passed away in the night. During the war, Mary also visited the battlefront on her horse. She took with her sandwiches, drinks, bandages and medicines, ready to help any soldiers in need. There was a temporary hospital set up close to the battleground, and Mary helped as best she could when she visited. It was a dangerous place to be. All of a sudden, shots would be fired and soldiers would scream for everyone to duck to the ground to avoid getting hit. Luckily, the worst injury Mary received on the battlefield was a dislocated thumb, which happened when she threw herself onto the ground to avoid gunfire. Mary didn't only treat British soldiers. She also treated French and Sardinian soldiers, who were Britain's allies in the war. Mary treated Russian soldiers too, even though they were technically the enemy. Mary had not always been treated well by others, but she believed in treating all people with equal kindness. After the war. In 1856, news spread in the Crimea that an armistice had been accepted. An armistice is an agreement from all sides to stop fighting. The gunfire stopped and the war was over. This was wonderful news for the surviving soldiers and their families back at home, who would see each other very soon. The end of the war also meant that the British Hotel was no longer needed, as there would be no soldiers to treat and feed. It was difficult for Mary to sell on the supplies and livestock, as there was no one around to buy them. So the business that Mary had built so successfully during the war collapsed once it was over. As spring came and the troops were bidding Mary goodbye, she couldn't help but feel sad that she didn't really have anywhere to go and had very little money to build herself a new life. Mary and Thomas Day were among the last to leave the Crimea after the war. By the time they reached England in August 1856, they had so little money that it was impossible for them to set up another shop or hotel. Eventually, they went their separate ways. Mary found herself not only without money, but quite unwell. Working so hard during the war had taken its toll. However, those who had returned from battle still remembered Mary and what she had done for them in the Crimea. She was invited as the guest of honour to a celebratory dinner for the soldiers at Surrey Gardens Music Hall in London. When news travelled that Mary was having financial difficulties, people donated money to a fund set up to help her. In 1857, a fundraising concert was held in her honour by the military, and was supported by many high-ranking officers whom Mary had known in the Crimea. That same year, Mary's autobiography, Wonderful Adventures of Mrs. Seacole in Many Lands, was published. Did you know? Mary had her portrait sculpted in 1859 by Henry Weeks, one of the most successful British sculptors of the time. Soon, she was a household name in England. Mary continued to treat patients in both London and Jamaica for the rest of her life. She died at her home in Paddington, London, in 1881. She was buried in St Mary's Catholic Cemetery in Kensal Green, London. Even though she had been so well loved, after she died and everyone who knew her had died too, she was forgotten about in history for 100 years. But in the 1980s, her story was rediscovered by historians. Thanks to her book and other records, Mary's extraordinary life was reborn, making it possible for generations to come to celebrate and remember her heroism during the Crimean War. Mary's legacy. Today, there are many tributes to Mary Seacole in both London and Jamaica. At 14 Soho Square, one of the places where she lived in London, a plaque is fastened on the outside wall. It says, Mary Seacole, 1805 to 1881, Jamaican nurse, heroine of the Crimean War, lived here. There is another similar plaque at 147 George Street in Westminster. Across Jamaica, at universities and in hospitals, there are many buildings and departments that carry her name. In 1991, Mary was awarded the Jamaican Order of Merit, which is an award given to a person, living or dead, who has contributed to Jamaican society through extraordinary achievements. An 1869 painting of Mary Seacole by Albert Challen was discovered accidentally in 2003 by an antiques dealer who found it hidden underneath a framed print at a car boot sale in Oxfordshire. In 2005, the painting went on display at the National Portrait Gallery. It now hangs there in the most extensive collection of portraits in the world. In 2004, Mary was voted number one in a list of the top 100 Black Britons. The idea for the list came from Patrick Vernon, a British social activist. The year before, the BBC had created a top 100 Great Britons list, which featured no Black people at all. Vernon wanted to highlight the many overlooked achievements of Black British people. The people voted Mary Seacole as the number one person on the list, which also featured a variety of entertainers, sports personalities, writers, academics, scientists and politicians. The statue of Mary outside St Thomas's Hospital in London is believed to be the first in the UK to honour a named Black woman. It was built following a 12-year campaign to raise enough money to create it. £500,000. Mary Seacole was a courageous woman who followed her dreams despite the obstacles in her way. She wasn't afraid to speak out against the injustices she faced, and she believed in herself even when others didn't. She dared to do things her own way, shaping the course of events that we know today as the story of her extraordinary life.